Hi, this is Ben Trefney, KALW's news director, and now is the time to support KALW. This is our spring membership drive, and we are asking for your support at KALW.org. Click the Donate Now button. Now, enjoy what we have to say.
Welcome back to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hena Baba. Almost everyone who flies into San Francisco or San Jose Airport has seen it, a vibrant patchwork quilt of colorful water. There on the southern edge of the bay, you can see bright pinks, pumpkin oranges, neon greens, and deep magentas, contrasted against the dark blues of the natural bay water. The last time KALW listener Donna Staten peered out an airplane window, she saw it too.
When the plane takes that right-hand turn and goes up the bay, at the southern end of the bay, there's a lot of bizarre colors and squares, and some are big white squares on the water, and some are pink squares on the water, and a lot of the water looks brown, and it just made me wonder, what is all that, and why doesn't the bay have a more natural coastline at the southern end?
So she asked KALW, and we sent out environment reporter Angela Johnston to tell us more.
To get the best view of what Donna's talking about, it helps to have a kite. Just ask kite aerial photographer Chris Benton. You can find him here at the Baylands most weekends, talking to his kite like a pet as he slowly coaxes it up into the air.
There we go. I'm going to send it up, I think, just a little bit higher. There we go. And it's just absolutely wonderful holding this line and being connected to this big invisible mass of air that's floating past us. Very satisfying.
Benton's kite is blue and white with a long tail that looks like a red feather boa. But the really cool thing about it is how he can fasten a digital camera to the line and send it up hundreds of feet in the air to snap pictures below.
When I first started photographing down here, it was largely an intoxication with the sort of color and texture of the place.
That was over a decade ago when Benton took a sabbatical from his job as an architecture professor at Berkeley to work with a microbiologist. The biologist photographed the Bay Area landscape from his microscope, and Benton captured the same area from above. One day, they came here on the water's edge of the South Bay.
And I was immediately taken. Such a visually exuberant landscape. And now this is 10 years later, and I'm still photographing.
This visually exuberant landscape, the reds and the corals and deep oranges outlined with bright white borders, they look like they could be natural. But the colorful squares are man-made salt ponds, engineered to extract and harvest salt from the salinity of the bay water. All 8,000 acres of ponds are now managed by a company named Cargill.
Cargill's harvesting about 600 tons of salt here in the South Bay. You can see the big stack of salt down in Newark. It's the one remaining salt plant.
The mud and the Mediterranean climate make it a great place to harvest salt from the water. A handful of family-owned businesses kickstarted the industry over a century ago, before they were all bought up by Cargill.
These are the remnants, really, of what is still an active enterprise, the evaporation of bay water to produce salt. Salt for industrial use and sometimes for the culinary use.
Salt for icy roads, salt for pretzels, and salt that eventually sits on your dining room table, after it's been cleaned up, of course. You can find it under the brand name Diamond Crystal. Salt making is a pretty simple process. Slightly salty bay water flows into one pond, and then gravity does its magic. The salt water works its way from pond to pond to pond, and as it does, it gets saltier and saltier through evaporation.
Those are colors related to the salinity of the salt ponds, and they're produced by microorganisms.
As the water gets saltier, fewer things can survive in it, and that's why we get those magenta and bright pink colors. Only a few types of algae and bacteria can bear the saltiest of ponds. They're called halophiles, salt lovers. And these salt lovers tend to be pretty colorful.
So each band of salinity will host one or two types of halophiles. They go through a whole range of greens and reds and oranges and yellows.
Photographer Chris Benton moves the camera with a radio airplane controller, He walks around the Baylands for hours, adjusting the camera and taking photos every other second, sometimes running back and forth to make sure the camera doesn't fall into the water. He likes to use a kite because it can go high enough in the air to give perspective, but low enough to notice changes in the landscape, changes away from commercial salt.
What I'm trying to do is capture the transition we're experiencing today, which is as rapid and dramatic, really, as almost anything that's happened before. Going in a happy direction, too.
As part of a huge effort called the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project, the Cargill Salt Company has freed almost 16,000 acres of their salt ponds.
We stopped making salt and we started managing for wildlife instead.
Cheryl Strong is a biologist with the project. I meet her at the Don Edwards National Wildlife Refuge in Fremont, a spot where a lot of this restoration work is happening. We walk up a hill and peer down at salt ponds in the midst of transformation, back into their natural state, marshland. The process, like making salt, is also really simple.
Literally going in with an excavator and cutting a hole through the levee.
Allowing the tide to come in and out twice a day, like it does naturally.
And as it comes in, it brings in sediment, it brings in seeds, and that's how you start to build your marsh.
It takes a bit more planning for the ponds that have walking trails along the levees or power towers running through them. But otherwise, it's pretty easy.
By the tide coming in and out, it's sort of doing it for free for you, right?
Take, for example, a salt pond the project opened up to the tides in 2006. Workers dug open the levees with a backhoe and watched nature do its work.
It is already growing a massive amount of native tidal marsh within it, and we already have our two endangered species using that pond in less than 10 years. So that was like a huge success story and happened much faster than we thought it would.
So far, the project has restored about half a dozen salt ponds in the South Bay, with three more coming in the next 5 years. In response, Bay Area-specific species like the salt marsh harvest mouse and a bird called the Ridgeway rail have bounced back. Another bonus, says Cheryl Strong, protection from sea level rise.
Silicon Valley is built up against these salt ponds, and they are currently providing some level of flood protection, but they are not flood protection levees. If we can get some tidal marsh built out in front of those ponds or turn some of those ponds back into tidal marsh, they will provide a much better buffer for sea level rise as we see those sea levels increase.
But as these areas transform from salt pond to marsh, the vibrant colors change too.
You're going to see a lot more natural blues and greens on the landscape because we don't have that end result of high salinity water at the end.
Photographer Chris Benton witnesses this change from the camera on his kite.
I won't say to my dismay as a photographer, but to my slight regret as a photographer, it's a landscape that's changing from the very exuberant colors of salt making, the bright greens and fuchsias and oranges and reds, to more natural tones as salt making gives way to restored marsh.
Moving towards the green marshland that once carpeted most of the South Bay. And he's okay with that. And so is Donna Staten, our listener who asked about the salt ponds.
I'm not sad. I think trying to protect natural wetlands is above all going to be most important for us going down the road. So people can take pictures now and we can look at them in books and online, but the natural habitat will probably be much better off in its natural state.
In the South Bay, for Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.